We're ready. Okay. Good morning. I'm Ken Fellman. I'm the president of NATOA for four more days. And I want to welcome you to our pre-conference session on using broadband to deliver local government savings. I am really excited about today's program. We have some dynamite speakers. Some of you know I am a former mayor, and we have another former mayor in the room, Mayor Richard. And I was thinking back in anticipation of this session, about 8 years ago, I was talking to the head of the Metro Denver Economic Development Council, a very sharp guy and one of the best economic development professionals I've ever met. And I was trying to get him excited about promoting broadband issues and connectivity issues and how important that was for economic development. And it was like pulling teeth. And you know, I'm sure that Graham has had similar experiences. You know, 8 to 10 years ago, there was only a few of us who were looking ahead at the importance of broadband and what positive impacts it could have on our local communities, economic development, education, healthcare, and a host of others. And I suppose the good news is today, so many more local elected officials get it and understand that this is broadband is a critical piece of the infrastructure that has to be available to local communities if they're going to thrive in the coming years. So we're here to talk about that today, and we have some really great speakers. And before we start the program, I want to introduce our host board member from NATOA, Barry Frazier. And while Barry's coming up, I will remind you that today's pre-conference seminar is sponsored by Google. We really appreciate Google having a major impact on our conference this year. The Wi-Fi in the meeting rooms for the duration of the conference is sponsored by Light Squared. Now, they told us the password access to the Wi-Fi was Light Squared. That didn't work for me, and the guy from the hotel typed in Hilton, and that did work. So try Light Squared. If it doesn't work, try Hilton. If that doesn't work, we'll get some staff in here to see what will. And if you're going to attend the baseball game with us tonight, the Oakland A's versus the Texas Rangers, pick up your ticket at NATOA's registration counter. We're going to meet in the lobby at 6 p.m. and take BART to the stadium. The fare is about $3.80 one way. So Barry has a couple of words of welcome and introduction from our host city, San Francisco. Barry Frazier.
Thank you, and welcome to San Francisco. I'm just delighted to have the NATOA conference here this year. I see a lot of familiar faces out there, and I see a lot of new faces out there, and I do want to welcome everyone to our city. I just wanted to let you know that you're in a great location here because you can walk pretty much any direction and come across some really interesting and fascinating things in our city. If you go south just a few blocks, you may know you could hit Market Street and you get all of the major public transportation, BART, Muni, that can take you pretty much all over the Bay Area, basically. And if you go east a few blocks and you're at the Bay and the Embarcadero and all kinds of wonderful things there, California Street, you can catch the trolley and head up the hill. And if you go kind of southwesterly a little bit, you will end up in Union Square, where there are, you know, hundreds and hundreds of shopping opportunities. And there are great restaurants everywhere. If you have any questions about where to eat, or if you wonder about a location or a restaurant, find me. I'll be happy to try to help you get some information. We have a number of other people from San Francisco here. You can search us out. We have the great team from SFGov TV that is recording some of the sessions here, and they'd be happy to answer your questions too if you have any. So welcome to the city. Have a great time. And Ken, back to you.
Okay. What Barry didn't tell you is he's arranged to have all those things he told you about. It's closed during the day, so there won't be any kind of feeling like you need to leave the conference to go shopping or see the waterfront. But after the conference sessions, it's all going to open up again, and please take advantage, and let's all spend a lot of money in the local economy. I'm going to bring up my friend and colleague and NATOA's president-elect, Joanne Hovis, to introduce our first speaker. Joanne.
Thanks, and I am really looking forward to today and this nice, intimate workshop environment in which to have this incredibly important conversation. So thanks to San Francisco for all of this effort and hospitality, and to SFGovTV and the board members, the committee members from San Francisco who worked so much to help us do this. I am very lucky to introduce the person who's going to make opening remarks as we sort of start engaging in this conversation today about broadband in our local communities and how we use it within government. Part of the conversation that we're having more broadly as a larger community about broadband and its impact more widely than just local government. But local government is certainly a fine starting point for the next 4 days of conversation. Our speaker is actually not himself from local government, but is one of the deep thinkers on broadband in all its complexity and in all the many ways that it impacts community. And I can really think of no better way to start and put a broader context and perspective on our conversations about our roles in promoting technology and communications infrastructure in our local communities than to think in this broad and wide way. So with all of that as a preliminary, let me get to where I'm going, which is to introduce Dr. Lev Gonick, who is the CIO of Case Western Reserve University. And I'm not going to go back and tell you all his credentials and his education and so on. I'll say, I think, even more consequentially for what we're doing here today, that Lev is somebody who has had a profound impact on our national conversation at the local and at the local level as well as nationally about what we do with broadband and why it matters and why technology and local input to communications matters. Lev is one of the founders of the One Community Network, or what's now called the One Community Network, which was a model for so many of the BTOP grants that so many of our members are now implementing. He was the visionary the person who made happen the Case Connection Zone, which is a demonstration project, the first in the country, to show what a gigabit to the home in a poor neighborhood of Cleveland could mean in the lives of the people who had that connectivity, and what was possible over that kind of connectivity to the home in the areas of energy and healthcare and education and other areas. And Lev is also one of the visionaries and driving personalities behind the GigU project, which you've all heard a lot about, I hope, and we'll hear a lot about more about in the next couple of days, which is the project that seeks to get more fiber to the home infrastructure in parts of the United States, particularly around universities, where we can maybe demonstrate what that would mean and drive a private sector market to build more broadly. It's hard to overstate what a big impact those three projects, among the other things that, the many things that Lev does, what an impact those have had on not just what happens in Washington, where I see people talking constantly about those projects, but what happens around the country in terms of the kinds of pilots and the kinds of planning and initiatives that are underway throughout the United States. It was not for any small reason that last year NATOA gave Lev our Community Broadband Visionary of the Year Award. And I think he's my friend. It's my incredible privilege. He's also my mentor and my somebody who I emulate in many ways. It's my great privilege to say that we have a visionary like Lev here to speak to us this morning. And I'm just going to stop there and let him come up and speak. Please welcome Dr. Lev Gonick.
Well, good morning, everyone. Great to be here. I really only have been asked to share a couple of general remarks and then get you back to your program. Reflecting, and I hope you'll reflect with me, these are extraordinarily exciting times. I mean, amazingly extraordinary exciting times when it comes to the question of broadband and especially next generation broadband services all across the land. We have, you have, some $4 billion of public investment and the build-out of middle-mile efforts that are underway. And we are actively, as a community, building not only for our generation, but arguably for many generations to come, the one and only major public sector thrust in building out broadband connectivity through the Department of Commerce BTOP grants, which I know a number of you are engaged in, and more broadly across the country. That level of investment and the underlying requirements associated with open network access, is, I think, will remain an enormously generative effort. I know a number of you have been actively involved here, and as I've been chatting very briefly this morning with some of you, in a couple of weeks we'll be getting together in Cleveland in an event that One Community and the NTIA is sponsoring on best practices and sustainability, which is, well, part of the second part of my opening remarks. So one enormously exciting development, obviously, is this once-in-a-lifetime activity that's underway. And you know, if you reflect on it, 3 years ago, this just was not in our consciousness about what was possible, the art of the possible. A second enormously exciting activity Joanne has referred to, which also has its origins, at least one set of origins, in the same way that the Department of Commerce BTOP program has, and that is the GIG.U, the GIG.U initiative. Which really comes out of the origins of the broadband plan, Connect America, as obviously does some of the origins of the funding that I've referred to. And GIG-U, as you'll hear from Blair Levin, who'll be here through the NTOA meetings, really starts with the question, from his perspective, how do we move private capital off the sidelines and into the ecosystem of building out next-generation networks in a way that positions us to minimize the gap between state of readiness to actually pay for on the consumption side with the investment that's sitting on the sidelines saying that there is no demand for gigabit services. And so together, Blair and a whole collection of higher education leaders, Mike Smelzer is certainly in the room representing, in my view, likely to be the campus and the community to lead us moving forward. But again, an opportunity to bring 37 university towns together to articulate, yes, there is demand for advanced network services of the gigabit variety with wireless, because we actually represent sandboxes, or if you will, a testbed facilities all across the land for responding to the question more broadly, what can we do to leverage technology to provide for next generation applications and services to change people's lives? And yes, it doesn't answer all the questions about everywhere in terms of the geography, but it provides us with some very, very important proof points. And to the extent that the case connection zone has provided catalytic value, it is because it is a proof point. And not because it's worked flawlessly. In fact, I think the most important thing is what we've learned from the flaws of trying to build out in an urban setting with real people and real housing arrangements, you know, building out this infrastructure as a research program to try to answer some of that. But GIG-U, I think, is an enormously exciting initiative that I think is likely to capture the imagination of, I think, certainly the university community, I think the public sectors, local government, and if we get it right, it'll also interest some of the private sector players. Of course, this includes the incumbent providers. It also is the emergent new providers in this space, including folks like Google, and others who have expressed interest, and a whole range of really very, very interesting ecosystem players. So that's a second, I think, enormously exciting activity that is underway. I think certainly there is so much else going on that has essentially been catalyzed by those activities and a number of others. There are conversations going on at the Office of Science and Technology Policy. Just as I was sitting here, got a little note from the folks in D.C., and the NSF, who are hosting yet another workshop on what may well become a program focused in on developing applications that run on top of these enormous networks. And that project is likely to be called US Ignite as it goes forward. And then in November 3rd through 5th, the NSF and the Office of Science and Technology Policy are hosting their third workshop, again, of researchers and entrepreneurs who are saying, right, we see things that will be going on with the investments that are coming out of BTOP, the investments that we trust will be happening out of US Ignite, and none of that is of consequence unless we actually find a way to catalyze the development of applications that can take advantage of that infrastructure. So the first message is, these are amazing times, and I think if in any way we reflect on it, it's hard to imagine being in a more exciting place and a more exciting time. Certainly in the next 3 years, we will find gigabit communities spawning all over the land. I expect that we will see price points under $100 for that kind of connectivity relatively soon. In fact, there are plenty of early indications that that's entirely doable today. That's exciting development, and yet to develop a strategy that is global in its orientation, we are not looking at something that's 3 years out. We are looking at a project that will take decades, if not decades, of work, which is enormously important to have that perspective. Let me just sort of share with you the tough love part of my story today. And that comes from our experience over these last 8 years, working with local government, working with local healthcare providers, local museums and libraries, schools, universities and colleges all across our neighborhood in northern Ohio, and speaking with privilege all over the land, and indeed internationally, about some of the lessons learned from our experience. A lot of conversation that we're having today is around broadband communities or gigabit communities, and I'm afraid that the conversation has largely lost its emphasis. We have largely been focusing on the first word and not the second word, the broadband or the gigabit, and not on the community. And I think it's a much tougher conversation to have for fascinating reasons. Why is it that we don't actually have a conception of what is a gigabit community? A gigabit community appears to be dropping fiber at the front door and declaring victory, which couldn't be further from the truth in terms of the challenge associated with actually creating sustainable communities in this country, certainly in our urban centers where I live and work. The challenge is really about spending time together in a process that's much more complicated than a business plan, and much more complicated than legislation or regulatory language. And that is actually engaging in the community, in a conversation about its own future. It's easy to dismiss, it's easy to say, you know, that's not my job, you know, I'm a technologist, I'm an engineer, I'm a politician, I'm a regulator, and that's somebody else's job. But today, the fabric of our society is under enormous stress. These are not, the new normal is not normal at all. And if our conversation around broadband communities doesn't move very, very quickly to a conversation about communities and what it means to help develop and sustain a smart and connected community strategy, a green and smart, a forward-looking community environment, then it won't be the one-offs like Detroit and Cleveland representing the biggest challenges. It will be a virus, unlike not only anything that we've seen, but in fact, arguably what we can imagine. The country we hear is, you know, polarized politically, but that's actually underlies a much bigger set of challenges, which has to do with an imagination challenge. You know, we are challenged to reimagine, rethink, ultimately rebuild our vision of what it means to be engaged in community development in the 21st century. And broadband needs to be part of the solution. But let's not lose sight of the fact that the biggest challenge is actually in creating sustainable communities, communities where there are good jobs, communities where there's good educational opportunities, communities where all of that activity can go on. And in our efforts in Cleveland, we have focused in on four areas that are about a partnership, not only between Case Western Reserve University, but all the educational institutions, both the formal ones and the informal ones. Cleveland's known for having the Cleveland Clinic. I mean, when you think about Cleveland all over the world, where I travel, I say, what do you know about Cleveland? It used to be LeBron James, now it's the Cleveland Clinic. Only. Well, one of the most important things to realize is how do you sustain a Cleveland Clinic as a healthcare provider in a city where more than 70% of the kids don't finish high school science? What are those challenges? And so one of the four areas that we have focused in on is as a community, which includes the science museums, the education institutions, the hospitals, is really about focusing in on STEM education, in particular trying to engage young people in realizing the enormous possibilities associated with discovery and opportunity for science. One major focal area. A second area that we are very much, this critical, when we ask parents and grandparents, especially grandparents, what they hope for their grandchildren, it's that they will actually have a quality of life that was better than theirs as grandparents. They've largely dismissed the idea that their children, their grandchildren's lives will be better than the parents' generation. This is the first generation growing up right now whose quality of life, lifestyle, income, job opportunities will not be as good as the generation before. And so the grandparents are worried that this is actually going to become a downward spiral, that grandchildren are also going to be facing this kind of a huge challenge. The second major issue is neighborhood safety. It is symbolic of the many challenges that communities like Cleveland face. And yes, there's something to be worried about homeland security, but in the context of Cleveland, it's actually neighborhood safety. The challenges we face are really this devolving condition where there are all kinds of stressors in the system leading to very, 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 very unfortunate devolution, really, of basic norms. And so, again, when we ask the neighborhood folk, what's your number one priority? We don't talk about broadband. What's the number one priority? We go with our School of Social Work, our Poverty Center at Case Western Reserve, Lou Stokes, the center's named after Lou Stokes and the Stokes family. And so when people are talking, they're not talking to technologists, they're talking to each other and they're talking to social workers, and their biggest concern is neighborhood safety. Neighborhood safety. What can we then do with broadband as a community between the formal public safety, the neighborhood safety? What can we do to leverage those kinds of challenges that the neighborhood face, and at the same time address the core mission of what universities do and what museums do and what public safety officials and Homeland Security and Departments of Justice do and the like. The third area that we're very much focused in on, again, in each one of the, each community, as you do these hard examinations of what it will take to have a serious conversation about sustainable communities, the first thing to do is to actively listen. What are these priorities? So in addition to talking about education, especially science and technology education, because if there is a future for Cleveland, it's in its health industry, and the health industry is enormously important to us, not only at the Cleveland Clinic, but the university hospitals, the VA, and our Metro Health facility. Pipeline activities are critically important. I've mentioned also neighborhood safety. The third area that we are enormously engaged in, not surprisingly, is health and wellness. Literally, one out of every three women living in the city of Cleveland has type 2 diabetes, obesity, all kinds of pulmonary issues in our community, and yet we are in some ways a mecca, right? People come from all over the world to get their health care attended to. The actual health of our community is significantly at risk. It's a huge issue. It's not a Cleveland, Ohio issue alone. And one of the enormous things that we have found through our case connection zone is an enormously valuable way in which we can leverage technology to bring real quality of not only dealing with chronic disease management, which is only one side of the equation, but also focusing on wellness. Wellness in a very comprehensive kind of way, not only with the formal medical and health system, but also with families, simple concepts, some very cutting-edge concepts. Everything from smart houses that have sensors in them that can tell the electronic medical record, all kinds of things going on in the house, with the patient, with the family, all kinds of really exciting things on the high-tech side, but more importantly, using video conferencing infrastructure to make possible consultations that today people have basically simply said healthcare is inaccessible to them because they can't get to it. And working with the payer systems, the insurance companies, to provide us with reimbursements where people are totally engaged with the use of the technology in a kind of the idea that provides intimacy when they're dealing with healthcare providers where they don't want to be seen walking into a clinic. That in fact they can't. They find, for example, an autistic young adult who's totally disruptive when he walks into a healthcare setting, is at home doing interactive health engagement, health and wellness work with a psychiatrist at one of our provider facilities at Belfair. Fascinating use of telepsychiatry activities that are going on. Challenges associated with students who are also not interested in being seen to be walking into clinical settings. Women, single household folk who are unable to wait for hours for a bus ride, sitting in the waiting room and the like, using the technology, really just to attend to those kinds of needs. And the fourth, so health and wellness is enormously important. And finally, winter's coming to Cleveland, again, surprisingly. And the biggest area that's of concern to us is the way in which we think about energy and energy management. Why? I mean, the Case Western Reserve University's engineering faculty are all over the ways in which you can use sensor technologies and all kinds of ways of aggregating energy demand across the grid. But for the neighborhood, the real issue is cost. The cost of energy is a huge issue. In fact, families are literally making huge choices between food and keeping the heat on in the winter. These are not sort of academic conversations. And so what can we do, again, to try to engage in changing behaviors, changing patterns of energy consumption, working to optimize the way in which people consume energy, using technology to allow them to remotely control energy in their homes, and most importantly, actually socializing, using the technology to create community conversations about energy consumptions. Because as it turns out, we have learned through our effort that the price point is actually fairly elastic in terms of people's willingness to turn down the heat. What really turns people's behaviors is when they start talking to each other. And so we have a little competition going on in the beta block where neighbors are actually competing with each other to see who can actually reduce the energy consumption the most, the north side of the block or the south side of the block, and then having conversations inside the community about how they did it. And those are actually leading to changes of behaviors that are quite exciting. So again, and I'll conclude with this and pass the program back to you. The easy part will ultimately, when history is written, the easy part will be building out gigabit or broadband communities. I know for most of us that is almost unimaginable, given all the Tylenol 3 headaches that we have day in and day out, dealing with these, just a total plethora of challenges associated with the mechanics of it. But history will write that was the easy part. Those communities who talk about sustainable communities in the same breath as they talk about building up broadband in the 21st century will be the generative, attractive, sustainable communities who will be attending to people's real needs. It redefines in many ways what local government, I think, really needs to be growing, developing competencies around. This is not easy. It is easier to deal with regulatory issues, hearings, and legislation. Much more difficult is to understand what competencies need to be developed in local government to attend to a holistic ecosystem approach to making sure that when your broadband communities are connected, that they are celebrating their community at the same time as they're celebrating their technology. Good luck to all of you.